Hey, everybody. This week at Flaherty on Films, we're talking about the film Sorry to Bother You.
Hit the music.
I'm Michael Flaherty.
I'm Colleen Flaherty. This is Flaherty's on Films, a little podcast where we talk about super normal movies. Michael, what are we talking about this week and what is it about?
This week, we're talking about a pretty cool film called Sorry to Bother You, and the IMDb description is as follows. In an alternate present-day version of Oakland, California, a telemarketer Cassius Green discovers a magical key to professional success, propelling him into a universe of greed.
Yeah, I didn't think that was the most important part of the movie, but I don't know how I would summarize it.
Yeah, I mean, because it kind of takes a turn and you can't spoil the turn.
That's true. Michael, have you seen this movie before?
I have. Maybe not in theaters, but I have seen it before, and I really, really like the film because it's very odd. I feel like you're supposed to like the film because of its like powerful messages, but no, I just love it. I feel like it's genuinely very funny, and I just like how out there it is.
Yeah, it's so funny because I saw this movie because you were like, wow, this movie is so good, you have to see it. And you do not like highly recommend movies that often.
Rarely, so like, yeah.
So I was like, all right, I got to see it. And I remember really liking it. Watching it again, I'm like, oh, I see why Michael loves this movie. Because yeah. It's like, oh, it's like a really cool critique of capitalism and race relations. But
that's not
it's
what I
also
like.
Very silly.
It's really silly. Yeah.
If I can give away a joke, like, please. Here's an example. Because it's like, it is a weird ass movie. And it is very surreal, very odd. But then they'll do cute jokes. Like, so at one point, the main character gets hit on the head with a can. And like on the cover, you see him with a big gash on his head with a wrap. And his girlfriend goes up to him and is like, oh my God, what happened? He's like, oh, this just cut myself shaving. What a dorky joke. It's so cute.
That's pretty funny. It took me a second to even get it. But it's like, he won't shave up there.
That's the joke.
Huh. Smart. It's a smart film.
It's a smart joke. That's not where you shave.
Yeah, and if the film reminds me a lot of the film Southland Tales, because, and here's all the reasons, because it is near future California, but it's like different in a way to make a very blunt political point. And it's like,
right, like, what was even the point of Southland Tales?
But like, it was trying to do a lot, and Southland Tales had a lot of different tones, which I feel like, right, this film had. And I feel like it's definitely like an auteur, am I saying the word right? Auteur director, like it's some one person's vision that you, yes, really see on the screen. And I just think it's funny because it's like this, I really like this a lot. Like it's a very fundamentally, there's a lot of high level similarities, but one is so bad and one is so good.
Yeah, I actually had similar thoughts about the film Idiocracy.
Oh, go for it.
But let's
that movie, can I just say that movie bothers me? Because people
so
bring it up.
Much.
Like, man,
so
brilliant satire. And
it's
like, no, it's not.
It's like we're living in Idiocracy. It's like that movie's thesis was like poor people should stop having so many kids. Like that was it.
But even at a more abstract level, they're just like, hey, what if in the future people were dumb? And now every time something dumb happens, like, oh, just like the movie. It's like, come on. Like it does not get that much credit. And you're right, when you dig deeper into it, the message is even stranger.
Right. And I think even the creator was like, I think people really give this film too much credit.
Really?
What he was trying to say.
I like
which I think
lot.
Is very funny. Who the guy who created King of the Hill, I forget his name.
Mike Judge.
Yes. Anyway. So my point in comparing Idiocracy and Southland Tales is they were both kind of films that people that had a lot going on or was trying to make a greater point. This movie was much more enjoyable and better than those movies. And I think I'd like to talk about why later.
Yes, but first, what are we going to do first?
We're going to go to our fan favorite segment, BAM.
Time for Sam.
And Sam comes on and tells us just some facts. Some.
Do we have fans?
We have so many fans.
We have so many fans.
I mean, we listen.
We listen. Sam's a fan. That's why it's the favorite segment.
She's like, 25% of our audience loves the segment.
The data shows they love the segment.
Pretty sure you guys just have a Patreon where at the $5 level you get to do a segment, and I've been the only one paying that $5 this whole time.
It was you.
We use that money to pay you, though. Yeah. So it's fine.
So, Boots Riley was born with basically this really amazing sense of activism from when he was a kid. His parents were both activists, and he was raised in different areas that really, like Detroit and stuff, that really just created this need for him to try and explain and build a better world. And in 2012, he started a screenplay for Sorry to Bother You. He calls it, in quote, an absurdist dark comedy with aspects of magical realism and science fiction inspired by the world of telemarketing. And he had actually been a telemarketer in California, so he really kind of knew that world, and that was just the direction he decided to go in to kind of get his message out there. It should be noted, he had no experience in the film world. At this point, he was an activist and a musician. He was the lead singer in his band, The Coup. But
spelled like Coop.
Spelled like Coop.
Which is how you spell Coup.
Yeah, so it's not even a band fact, really.
That's just a French fact.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was one of those things where he just really didn't have an in to get the movie made. But he was so passionate about this story that he actually recorded an album of the same name, Sorry to Bother You, with his band, that he wanted to use as a way to get the story out there and to get his movie made, basically. Like, he knew his platform was music, and so he made a whole soundtrack with the plan also that this would become the soundtrack for the film when it got made. Obviously, it would not be made for many, many years, but when they started filming, there was a new president in the White House. His name was Trump. And
the Home Alone guy?
The Home Alone guy. I know, it's a crazy time. So basically, a lot of people, when they were reading his script, they're like, oh, yes, this is exactly like nowadays. Like, this really works for the moment. And he's like, I wrote this when Obama was president. Like, this is not Trump specific. It's just like a general, this is where we're at. If it seems relevant, it's because.
You know what I hate most about Trump? When he created what? Capitalism. I was like, too far, man.
Too far. That reminds me of that thing about Hadestown, that very successful musical. And they have a song. So they like won all those Tonys in like, what, 2017, 18? And one of their songs in it is called like Building the Wall. And people are like, that's a little on the nose. And he's like, this is from a concept album from 2010. Everyone settle down.
But yeah, even so then, Building the Wall was a thing. I thought Building the Wall has been a thing like forever.
But yeah, but don't you think it's a little on the nose if you were critiquing the Trump era?
Okay, you're absolutely right. Sorry.
Well, so actually, there was one line. So they had to kind of work on the script when they actually knew they were going to get it made so that they could remove anything that could very specifically be said, this is about Trump. So they were reworking that, but there was one line that they had to remove, which was a line where it was, quote, worry-free is making America great again. And yeah. It was like, I wrote that in 2012. I had no idea that that would become Trump's slogan. He based it off of pretty much every white Republican.
Well, it was like
it's a Reagan thing.
It was a Reagan thing. And then like before that was the American Fascist Party thing. And
yeah,
people don't have any sense of irony. I'm really surprised to hear that he is not any like, not even an amateur film guy. Like,
no.
This film has such a strong visual voice. Like, this is a if you just watch it, you would think like, oh, this is a guy who's like obsessed with film,
because it's like an Edgar Wright picture almost.
Yes. Like they really take advantage of the medium. It's incredibly visual and interesting. I'm really surprised that
it's
yeah.
crazy.
No, he had no background. In fact, he's been, I think, tapped to work on a TV show, but that's even in super pre-production. Like, this is really his only work in the film industry.
He's a talented guy. That's very
yeah. cool. So the film star is Lakeith Stanfield. And Lakeith actually was recommended because the original star was supposed to be Donald Glover of 30 Rock, Community, and Atlanta fame. But he couldn't film this because he was shooting Solo, a Star Wars
That's
story.
Too bad. That's such a trade down.
Yeah.
I mean, he probably got paid more money, though.
Probably a lot. Probably five times
Disney money.
Yeah, Disney money versus telling a very important story. It's a toss-up.
Is there any post quotes from Donald about this decision?
I don't have any quotes about it, but he was the one who recommended Lakeith. So he was like, hey, I'm really sorry I can't do this, but my co-star is fantastic and you should
Great.
Really get him to it.
Great recommendation. He's very good.
He is good. You know, really and nice. Donald is obviously a great actor, but he might have been too, like, I don't take him very seriously. Maybe I haven't seen enough of his work, but because I guess
I think if you saw Atlanta, you might think differently.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
I think I kind of agree that this actor did a better job.
I know him from Derek Comedy, like the YouTube videos he did like 15 years ago.
That's funny.
There's a mugger in the back of your car. Do you know that video?
No.
The training video where he's like teaching karate to like protect himself from muggers, but the muggers are like, the mugger is sleeping in his bed in his own home. Common situation.
That's funny.
First, get wrist control. Second, get your gun.
Real life situation number two. You're at a friend's house. He's having a barbecue. He's mugging you. All right, he wants your money to buy crack. So what's the first thing you're going to do? Wrist control. All right, you got the wrist. Now, do you feel that? Do you feel I'm kind of controlling your movements a little bit? Because that's when I pull out my gun.
We'll link that in the show notes.
Yeah, folks. For sure.
So some other casting in there. There's Jermaine Fowler, who is just a stand-up comedian and hadn't really done
He's the
any
friend?
Kind of film. Yeah, he's the friend. He hadn't really done any films either, and was really intimidated when he first came onto the scene because, like, you do have a very talented cast.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm just a comedian. I don't know what to do. But Boots was like, man, you're just funny as you are. Just stand there.
Yeah, he was great.
So they brought in him. And then Terry Crews, I thought was interesting. He basically read, like, Terry Crews can, at this point, get pretty much any job. He's Terry Crews. He is well known. He read the script and he was like, I will pay you. Because he related so much. He grew up in Flint, Michigan, and he is like reading this, like it's so many people. He was talking in an interview about like how he's seen his community that he grew up in, where people get so invested in a business, and then like when it leaves, like it leaves this whole community with nothing. So he was like, I need to be in this one way or another.
That's awesome. So,
it just really seemed like this script gave it felt like a lot of the actors reading it really related and really just had this motivation, like, I need to make
this I should
film.
Say, just by the name of it, I wouldn't think Terry Crews is somebody I would take seriously. But I took him seriously in this movie. Do you know what I mean? He's a very serious role in this movie. And I, like, fought for him.
So, filming started June 22nd, 2017 in Oakland,
California. Oh, wait. Here's my fact.
Oh, yeah.
Excuse me. Patton Oswalt was the first person to sign on to this movie. He is the first one who read the script. Like, I love this movie. I want to be a part of it.
That is fantastic.
Yes.
Very. So Patton.
Yeah.
So it would film in Oakland, California, and it would wrap on July 30th, 2017. So what was I hate to say this, but devastating enough about the situation is that they were able to save on some money, because obviously this was a very small production, because they didn't need to build sets like a tent village for all the homeless and all of these things, because it was just there. So a lot of that in Oakland, like, they were able to just film without having to build sets.
But they did have to build horse people.
Well, you know. They had some money.
If folks at home have not seen this movie and are listening to this, they're like, horse people? It's weirder than you think, actually.
I don't mean like person who's like, yeah, mentally like a horse.
No. Or interested in horses, which is usually probably how that's used. But anyway.
Yeah, this movie is interesting. So it would premiere at Sundance Film Festival in January 20th of 2018, where Anna Pirno Pictures would acquire its rights and then release it on July 13th, 2018. It would make $17.5 million in the United States and $18.3 million worldwide. That number is a little bit smaller than normal because apparently this film had a hard time getting distribution rights worldwide. I'm sure
that's weird, just because of the cast alone.
Yeah, it's, but you know what's crazy is think of some of those actors. This whole film's budget was $3.2 million, which I have to assume is mostly actors' pay,
right?
Because they had some serious names in this.
It looks so good, though. Like, this doesn't looks like a proper cheap film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's, yeah. Think about it. Such a short budget.
And Tessa, and then, what's her name? Thompson?
Tessa Thompson.
She's like a real. I thought she was a real.
God damn
she's an A-lister, yeah. I thought.
Yeah. Oh, she's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure, like Sam said.
And the Korean guy. I don't know his name, but he's a. He's
what
up
is
there.
It called when actors really like a project so they want to get paid less? Like,
scale?
Get paid scale. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, and then they usually just get a percentage of the profits instead.
Yeah.
Probably that kind of thing. Well, okay. So, you know, we watched that Shiva Baby and they're like, well, that's a cheap movie. Like that. Okay. Right.
That looks
like a cheap movie. Yeah. This does not look like a cheap movie.
There's a new movie on Netflix that people are talking about with Jake Gyllenhaal called The Guilty. And it's like, cool, because he's a 911 operator. It literally takes place in one room for the whole hour and a half. This movie does not take place in one room. There's a lot of rooms.
I still think my favorite thing about Shiva Baby was that they just rented an Airbnb.
That's so funny. We got to do that some weekend. Just rent an Airbnb, make a
just
movie.
Just make an amazing movie.
Michael, you said HBO. Michael Caine has to be in every one of your movies. So we have to get the Airbnb and Michael Caine.
You didn't let me finish. Get Michael Caine.
So unfortunately, this film just doesn't have a lot of fun facts about it, so I'm done with my facts, but I do have my question of the week.
Okay.
Let's hear it.
Which is dinosaur based?
Ooh.
There we go.
So the word dinosaur comes from a Greek word. What do you think the Greek word for dinosaur means?
Bird.
Tall lizard.
Michael's pretty close. Terrible lizard. Terrible. Which is not to imply that it's fearsome, but that it's majestic.
Terrible.
And big.
But great.
But great. How about the tallest dinosaur? How tall is its head off the ground?
So like 7 feet.
No. Like 100. No. 400 feet.
Oh, not just the head by itself.
No.
Oh, okay. What'd you say, Colleen?
400 feet.
401 feet, plural.
Okay, well, now it's 20 feet, so that's...
We watch too many movies, I guess.
Wait, really? Only 20 feet?
Yeah.
Brontosaurus in Jurassic Park look huge. That's only 20 feet off the ground?
That's the real documentary we saw at Jurassic Park, Sam. They were huge.
Well, I should say it's the tallest hunter, so maybe.
So a T-Rex is only 20 feet?
It wasn't even a T-Rex. It's a... Dino Chiri.
Can they even open doors?
You know what was the craziest T-Rex fact I was reading? Is that their arm length is like slightly longer than the average human arms. Like, I assumed it was way bigger than my arms, even though they're little. But no, not that much bigger than our arms.
Crazy.
It's their little arms.
So they could like just wear a tank top made for people. Does that logic check out?
No. No. Your torso still goes in a tank top.
Yeah. How big is her torso, Sam?
But their arm could fit through this.
Yeah.
So if, like, Michael, an opposite tank top, like just sleeves.
just the open sleeves. Yeah. All right. That's it?
Yeah.
All right.
that was Bam.
Time for Sam. That was a Bam. Like a gun. Let's go to our next segment that we call Critics Corner. It's not called Trouble on the Amazon. That was our old segment because it's more than Amazon reviews.
Okay, so I will start.
There you go.
This is very highly reviewed. Sorry to Bother You is as much a character-driven story about the gentrification of Oakland and the Bay Area writ large as it is an absurdist anti-capitalist fable. Says Hannah of the Atlantic. Georges? I don't know.
Hold on. Burping. This next review is by Rundskop, who is an Amazon reviewer. You can just leave reviews there. I'll let that up. I'm shocked to see such a poorly thought out movie with current ratings higher than one star. The fact that audiences enjoyed it, this is frustrating. This is frighteningly telling of how intellectually bankrupt society is becoming. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I will also say that I did not include any of the racist reviews.
Oh, there were some?
Yeah, there were some.
Shit.
I mean, it wasn't that bad. It was usually just about like how much this movie hates white people.
They must have been old because I don't think that's a problem anymore.
Yeah. Good. I mean, that's like a 2018 thing.
Yeah, that's like a long time ago.
If you can remember. This movie, the directorial debut of rapper and activist Boots Riley, explores racial, class, and financial gulfs of human society. It does so in a way that is bizarrely funny and awkwardly confronting, says Stephen Romy of The Australian.
Oh, yeah. I almost had a heart attack. I'm like, I don't see Peter Bradshaw, but oh, I do. I see. Anyway, he's coming up, ladies and gentlemen. Just, yeah, you could, there's the, like, skip 30 seconds so you can get to him. This next one is by Brittany Johnson, who's an Amazon reviewer. This movie looked funny from the preview, but is super political and gets really weird towards the end. You know, that's that's actually entirely true. Brittany Johnson, you're right on the money.
You nailed it. Peter Bradshaw. This is from Peter Bradshaw of The Guardian. He's a friend of the pod.
Love him.
The Anglo-Saxon verities of class and speech, as proclaimed in Shaw's Pygmalion via the stage musical. Oh,
can you explain this part to me? So far, I'm lost.
So I think he's probably started with My Fair Lady, which is Shaw's Pygmalion on the stage.
Okay.
See, and this like, and that was about.
Oh, I guess that was
class
about
and speech.
Actually, I was like, how is that? Actually, that makes a lot of sense. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
It's actually
Peter.
Pretty.
I'm on board.
Are transferred to race in this anarchic satire on capitalism from the Chicago rapper and filmmaker Boots Riley. It's a funny, persistently startling, and cheerfully offensive future world fantasy.
That was a good review. I was going to make fun of that comparison, but it's a really good comparison. This next review, just like Brittany's, is actually completely spot on. It's actually totally right. Ew, horse penis. That's right. I mean, it's
that
in
is
there.
Correct.
It's in there. I mean, it's not
it's
not in
not,
there.
It's not not ew.
Right. It's gross.
ENT. She got it. All right. So let's talk about what the movie is about.
What is it about? What is this weird movie we're talking about?
So like the main character is Cassius Green, pronounced like Cash is Green.
You know what? I never put that together.
Really? I do feel like if we're going to talk about like the Southland Idiocracy kind of comparisons, sometimes this movie's commentary is a little like, oh, okay, I get it. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Sure. When he like gets bonked on the head and then he's bleeding from the left eye and it's like, oh, left eye, like those left eye activists.
Oh, I didn't get that one.
We're piecing it together. It's just like Southland is. You got to see it three times. And this was my third time. And
the popular show where people just get the shit kicked out of each other. I didn't think that was very funny or insightful.
I feel like that was a literal bit in Idiocracy.
It's all my balls was the show.
Yeah.
Why do I remember that? Anyway. So the movie opens and he gets a job as a telemarketer.
Which is a funny scene because there's like a whole buildup. We're like, here's my resume. Here's everything I'm good at. Please give me the job. And they're like, your resume is shit, but that doesn't matter. You're hired.
No, they talk through the resume. He brings his employee of the month plaque and his award from high school. And he's like, well, so none of this is real. Where, did you make that? Well, I had it made. And he's like, here's what I see. That tells me you have initiative and you know how to read. And that's all we need.
Great. Great line.
That's a really good bit. So he's not very good at it until Danny Glover, who is, what a delight to see him in this film. He's like, the problem is, Cassius, who is a black guy, he's like, you got to use your white voice. He's like, people already say I talk white. What do you mean? He's like, no, your real white voice. Like, again, okay, so we talked about this before, about how Danny Glover goes in this great monologue about like, no, the white voice is like, you know, somebody who's never had a real worry in the world, someone who doesn't think about how they're going to pay their rent, somebody who's never been preyed on with suspicion, like just how white people think they sound. And now when I heard that monologue, I was like, okay, now he's going to have like fucking Don Draper's voice. And then he has Patton Oswalt's voice, which was like a really strong choice. And then later another black character has a white voice who is
David Cross.
I got it opposite. Sorry. Cassius Green has David Cross's voice.
Yeah.
And then the other guy, but again, two very similar nerdy ass voices. And I'm like, that's an interesting.
I feel like they just went with like whitest in the sense that we know.
Right. I liked it, which is
comedic. Yeah.
It is also very funny. Like seeing this, I'm going to say it, like super hot black guy having David Cross's voice is just comedic.
This maybe comes up later, but I love when all the friends are at the bar and Cassius just whips out the voice. He just like, cheers, but he's in David Cross. And his friend's like, whoa, that's so cool. You sound overdubbed.
That's funny.
Yeah, I liked that a lot.
So anyway, Cash is doing really well, but then his friend Squeeze, who is, I know as Glenn from The Walking Dead.
Yeah, me too.
Also, yeah, a lot of attractive men in this film. A
lot of hotties.
And Tessa Top. Yeah, just hotties all around.
Hammer. Yeah.
Which canceled. But,
canceled. But can't eat people hot. Nowadays. Jesus.
Just can't eat people. Can't PC eat people. Culture run amok.
Jesus Christ.
So anyway, they form a union because like they're really underpaid and it's bad. So him and his friend and Cash's girlfriend, Tessa Thompson, whose name is Detroit, mm-hmm. they're all doing union stuff, which is very fun. Except Cash gets promoted to be a power caller. Whoa. And he's like, man, I'm about to get kicked out of my house because he lives in his uncle's garage and his uncle's mad that he hasn't paid the rent. But then the uncle's like, you know what? It doesn't even matter because I'm losing the house. Like,
that's a good line. You know, if I feel like if you don't know this movie and you're just hearing like, oh, it's political, it's anti-capitalist, you're going to be like, oh, it's just a bunch of people fucking yelling at the man. But I like at this early scene, Cash just like yells. He's at Terry Crews. It's like, man, I don't have to listen to people like you. People like you are just trying to control the world. Terry Crews is like, Cassius, I'm your fucking uncle. Do you know that line?
Yes. Because he's like, you know, I gave you a place to live. I gave you that car. He's like, this is a piece of shit car. He's like, all right, I'll take it back. I mean, don't.
It's like, nah, I need it.
So anyway, he goes to the power caller. I'm going to run through this, but it is not going to come across how bizarre this film is. Like everything that's normal, they would take a. Here's an example. So I just told you about him being a telemarketer. They decide to film this by him. Every time he does a call, his desk drops into the living room of where the call is taking place.
Which is really cool. Yeah, it's like they could have done it in one level, right? Yeah. Where like, so like he could have been, he calls and then you just like see him and you see the person he's talking to. They could have done it in another level where his desk is physically there. But what they did is like physically like, oh, I'm like transporting. And it's like, there's no actual reason why he's physically moving his whole body, like teleporting to where they are. But it's just fun.
I feel like a lot of times the filmmaker was like, we could just do it a normal way. But let's not. Like, they have that conversation about the white voice, and for some reason in the background, a Xerox machine is exploding with paper. There's no explanation. It just is.
There was one review that actually made me go see this movie initially. And one of the comments was like, this movie feels like the director thought that this might be his only movie. So he just made sure to put in everything that he would ever want in a movie.
That's fun.
And I thought that was fun. True. You know.
So anyway, he goes to the power caller suite where I guess he meets another guy, another black guy with a white voice who might be a figment of his imagination. That was
unclear. We don't know. We're confused.
We don't. And so he works for this company, Worry Free, selling slave labor, which, all right, cool. And I actually thought the way they did that was really interesting because I thought it could have been done in a cheaper way, but it was like they recruit people who voluntarily agree to just sign over their lives for food and shelter to work for this company. So it's not like they're forcing anybody.
Yeah, and it's kind of a creepy concept because I feel like it could happen. Like, isn't Amazon proposing like Amazon towns?
Right. It's not.
I just made that up, but that could be real.
And things like that have been done before in company towns. Right. And so it's like, it seems like it could be isn't this capitalism? But isn't it, guys? A little bit. It's not crazy. So I don't know. I think sometimes they go a little hard, but most of the time, I think the commentary is done. It's a little amped up from our reality, but it's still resonates.
Why I like this movie is like there is a lot of political commentary and some of it is really blunt, but it's all just like very fast. I'm never like, oh, okay, I get it. You know, it's like they never have to like repeat the same point. You know, they introduce the concept of worry-free. In one scene, you like see a billboard that says worry-free, and another scene is like a commercial. It's like, hey, what about this worry-free? It's like, hey, it sounds good. Like, it's not like, I don't feel like they overdo it.
But like, you also do feel for Cassius as he's doing really well at his job and he gets to pay off his uncle's house who's done so much for him and he can finally live in a real apartment with his girlfriend. And he's distancing himself from the union because he's doing so well. And it's like, yeah, I get that, you know?
And he doesn't want to end up like his high school football team.
Right. Yeah. Just a lot of economically depressed people around. And he's still even just surviving even as he's doing well. So it's like, he's not doing a villainous thing. He's doing what we're all incentivized to do.
We're supposed to do, yeah.
I don't know. I just thought that was good.
Yeah. Lakeith is such an interesting actor. I was watching him early on. I was like, do I even like him? Because he's so just like, I feel like he's mumbling. I feel like he's being him instead of being the character initially. That's what I thought. But there's later scenes where you really see like him just go all out. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
I also think he has very pretty eyes.
He's a beautiful man.
Yes. So anyway, his girlfriend leaves him. She's an artist, by the way. And like, again, I just thought it was interesting because she's like, I have to leave you because I don't like what you're doing politically. And it's like, you sell art to rich people. Who are you to tell me what? Are you changing the world? I don't know. I thought that was just a really good conversation. So Cash gets invited to the worry-free CEO's party. And this is where things go off the rails a bit. Mm-hmm. So Cash goes to the party. Worry-free CEO Steve Lift, played by Armie Hammer.
Oh, anyway, is he the cannibal?
He is the cannibal.
Okay, yeah.
Who
yeah.
Also
okay.
abuses women. And
yeah,
he
I remember. I remember.
He sucks, but he's also very good in this movie.
So he's really good.
White douche, entitled douchebag.
He's kind of like he's got a cannibal energy in this movie. That's kind of his character.
He's very believable as an evil CEO.
Yes.
So in a private meeting, he offers Cash some cocaine, which is important.
On a weird choice, a plate with a picture of a horse on it. I don't know what that's about.
Weird choice. So one point,
I love, by the way, sorry, there's also like a lot of horse decorations in the background. Like, I love how much unnecessarily they foreshadow this. What you're about to say, which I don't know what it is.
Which, by the way, I love the way they set up this scene because he's like, I want you in on this. I got to show you this video. He's like, I really have to pee. He's like, no, hold it. He's like, so anyway, and he's like, I really want to list this, but I have to pee. He's like, fine. So he goes to the bathroom, but he instead goes in the wrong door because he says goes in the J door, and there's like 30.
There's like a teal. There's an aqua door.
So he goes to one of the doors, and there's like he can hear someone like say help me, and then it's this half man, half horse, so much creepier than you're imagining. It is bad. And he's like screaming, and then Cash is screaming. It's like, ah. And so the CEO comes back and he's like, oh man, look, if you just watch the video, everything will be explained. You wouldn't even be weirded out. Mm-hmm. So then he shows him this claymation video to show that, oh yeah, we're just turning people into half horses because then they're really good workers.
This is another example where the political commentary is extremely blunt, but just like you could detach the political message and the scenes are fun by themselves or exhilarating.
And then at the end of the video, they learn how they turn people into equestrians or equestrians.
Equisapiens?
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Is they get them to snort a substance. Remember the Coke from earlier? And he's like, what the fuck? And he's like, hey, man, I'm not evil. Settle down. It's Peruvian. And he's like, you need to be more specific. They have horses in Peru, I assume.
That's a great line.
So then he gets offered like a ton of money to just become an Equisapien for 5 years to act as a false revolutionary within the Equisapiens. It's weird. So he's like, fuck. So he goes to see Detroit, his ex-girlfriend at this point. And she's like, hey, you sent me a video call and I wanted to ignore it. And he's like, he's really worried he's turning into a horse. He hasn't yet.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I got this video call from him. He's like, that's weird. I lost my phone. And it's the horse is like saying, help me. So he's like, all right, I got to blow the lid off this. So he goes on the show. I got the shit kicked out of me to show the video. And then he goes on the talk show circuit to see to talk about the evil stuff that Worry Free is doing, like turning people into half horses. You guys, doesn't go well. This is seen as a scientific, a groundbreaking advancement. People are crazy about Worry Free and the CEO. The stock reaches an all-time high.
But I love it. It's just like, yeah, that's not drawn out. It's just like, then there's one quick scene. It's like, and Worry Free is great. Everyone loves this.
Nobody cares. So Cash has apologizes to everybody, rallies the union. They break into, where did they break into?
Somewhere. Steve Liff's mansion?
Yeah. Wait, isn't that the end?
Oh, sorry. Where are you at?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I'm at the end. So they all break in. The Equisapiens help them. And anyway, the fight lives on. But then the very end of the movie, Cash turns into a horse,
mm-hmm.
which is really creepy.
But they talk normal. So they still have all their human consciousness and they're just physically horse-like.
It's like, to describe it, it's like a really buff guy with a rubber horse head.
Yeah.
And they do have, in fact, a very large horse penis prosthetic.
I wonder if you really think about it. Maybe this is bad, but I wonder if you really think about it. If this whole Steve Lift make you a false revolutionary plan makes sense, because if you have a whole horse army, like that seems like the easiest army to overthrow you ever. So it's like, yeah. You need to think of ways to control them.
It seems like that's what they're hinting at the end.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, even though the video says that they're like gonna mind wipe you.
Yeah, didn't work.
This didn't seem to work out.
Anyway, that's the movie.
That's the movie.
It's weird, man.
But so, again, there's a lot in it, you know? There's like a whole art show exhibit that we missed where they're throwing water balloons of blood at her.
I feel terrible because I thought Tessa Thompson was just putting on a British accent, but that was a British actress doing that voice. Like that was her white voice. I didn't get that.
There's a lot in this movie. I did not realize. I don't even understand that.
That she has a white voice and it's a British woman.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
I know, right?
Maybe that's why I like this. So Southland Tales had a lot of like, what? But all of that was really shoved in your face and it blocked you from understanding the movie. None of the weird stuff ever blocks you from understanding the movie.
I also think it's Southland Tales. It's like, I don't really get what the thesis is, but I do kind of get what they're doing most of the time. Like it's not that deep or clever, you know?
Whereas the message is clear.
Disjointed.
And all the actors understand the film, you assume.
Yes. I don't know. I guess I think it's good political satire. Again, unlike Idiocracy, it's just the message is better, first of all. Mm-hmm. It's more interesting. But as you said, it's a really enjoyable, funny movie apart from that. And it's also just a really interestingly shot film, really well put together. I really liked it. Although I will say, this is not a movie for everybody.
No.
It's a lot. And it's not even the politics. It's the
style.
Some of the visuals and the style. It's a lot.
Yeah,
I would not recommend our mother watch this movie.
No, you know, I would not recommend John, which is a good segue, but I want to say more things. There's a part in this movie where Cassius Green got the promotion. So he is kind of against the strike. He's a, what do you call it?
A scab.
He's a scab. So his friends are pissed. And they're like, Cassius, you're a scab. You betrayed us. And he gets into a very loud argument with his friend, but it is a compliment argument.
It's
he starts
so
like, well,
funny.
I hope you have a great day. I hope you have the best day. And then it escalates.
You smell amazing. No, no, you smell like a fresh spring day. It's just deodorant, man. No, it can't be. It smells expensive.
That's a good moment.
They're like shouting at each other.
I always like when you see good actors, but you don't recognize them because it just feels like totally new. And I liked all the telemarketer higher ups, you know, when they're in that bottom floor and there's the three like managers. I felt like they were all very funny and I don't know. And I will never recognize them as anything else.
Yeah. That HR woman was really funny.
Really, really good. Just because she was just doing very generic HR, like phony talk.
Another one of us. Am I right? It's very funny.
Cash is like, yeah, when are we going to get paid more? They're like, oh, like, don't talk
am
about
I right? But you know, social capital is the real capital, you know? When I say a line like that, you're like, okay. But it's really not that bad, I thought.
It's just funny.
The in your face stuff.
It's a funny movie. There's drama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so also, I don't know. I just love, I feel like even though it was a movie definitely about the perversion of capitalism, it's also really sympathetic to the idea of why people go along with it, right? Why we're all just in this really desperate situation where we could lose everything tomorrow. And it's so much worse for Black Americans, you know, who just don't have the kind of generational wealth or security that.
Yeah.
White Americans
we didn't really make
have.
Any comments about the racial commentary, but I don't feel like either of us know what to say.
But right. I just think that it's very understandable.
There's a weird thing. The movie Get Out, which is like a 2017 horror film. Mm-hmm. And one of the characters in it is Bradley Whitford. And he is like a Democrat, like leftist. But obviously, he turns out to be pretty evil and pretty very racist. But one of the early lines he says is like, I love Obama. I voted for him twice. I would have voted him a third time if I could. And then later, after this movie came out, people were saying about Get Out, like, oh, I love Get Out. I saw it 40 times or something more reasonable than that. And people were like kind of connecting the two. Is like, okay.
Like a pat on the back
yeah.
for liking a racially relevant
film. Like, okay, we get it. It's like that where it's like they're so into like to more sort of saying it about themselves, like, because I just care so much. I mean, I hate to use the word virtue signal, but it's kind of like that idea. But yeah. So the whole reason I bring that up, the whole tangent, is like, I don't want to say like, oh, I love this movie because of what it does for Black people, you know. So I feel self-conscious about liking this movie a little bit because I don't want to be that. Does that make any sense?
Should.
Yeah,
I don't think you should feel self-conscious about it.
But it probably is really good racial commentary if I was smart and
again,
understood it.
I thought that it wasn't hammy. It was like really smartly done. Because when they do the white voice bit, you think it's going to be one thing. But it's really just a small bit, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, it's not like the plot of the film, really.
No, it's not the plot of the film.
Because the film
just
does so much.
Small layer in all of it. And it's, yeah, just one small thing about how he has to make himself appealing to the white power structure. I mean, and then the scene at the party where they're like, do a rap, and he's like, no, like, I really can't rap.
Yeah, which is good. And then he just says the n-word a whole bunch and they're like, yeah, like that's good comedy. It's like, I don't know how to phrase it exactly, but I feel
it's like, you know, yeah, it's like the more, it's funny in a movie that's so in your face in a lot of ways, the commentary is not. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like that Bradley Whitford line is funny because it's like, oh, if he's not, you know, a racist Republican shouting at you, then he's not racist. It's like, no, this is how most people are racist, right?
Yeah.
These subtle low expectations things, or these you can rap, or this. Anyway, yeah, that's
are
that's
we good
all
to
my Yeah.
So I feel like we're both out. Here's who's not racist. Our brother John in our next segment that we call Bro Call.
Hey, John, did you see Sorry to Bother You, which is a very hard movie to Google because it's just like a normal phrase.
I did. I did watch it.
I'm going to guess you did not like it because it's weird.
Well, so if you had a checklist and like, John, you're going to watch a movie and you had a checklist, like, let's just make sure, check these things off to make sure John will like this. Item number one on that checklist is, does this movie feature performative performance art? And if that check is yes, John Flaherty's not going to like that movie.
Interesting.
It's a scene.
And honestly, I think that you can extend that out to the whole movie because I didn't get it. I got it at a high level, what they were trying to say and do, but I didn't get it at the lower levels.
Interesting.
And therefore, I thought this movie was just full of itself and kind of just going for a point but not really getting there, but thinking they did and kind of rolling with that. You know, like performance art.
Huh. I kind of disagree because I hate movies that are like that, like that are so full of themselves with the story they're trying to tell. And I thought, I guess because I was so delighted otherwise by the movie that it didn't seem too...
Yeah, I'm like a third opinion where it's like all this political messaging is going on, but the movie is enjoyable even apart from that.
Oh, yeah. The comedy bits, like, I liked the white voices. I thought that was a fun bit, though. I mean, because considering that was the central pillar of the movie, mm-hmm. they went to that well a lot.
Yeah.
Danny Glover, good to see he's still around, still doing stuff. The stories and the messaging, it just didn't do it for me. Like, I didn't even get, like, what was the whole point of the unionization and then the love triangle? Like, what was the point of any of that?
Yeah, I don't know the love triangle. That was not necessary.
I agree with that.
Okay, yeah. Like, all the stories, all the stuff they put, all the lines that they cast never came home for me.
I think that's kind of the point, though. To me, that was that there is no satisfying narrative in the fight against a oppressive capitalist system.
Oh, okay. If that's really what the movie was going for, then fuck that movie.
Okay, well.
Because it's a fucking movie. You got 2 hours to tell a concise story and wrap it up. If you're not going to wrap it up, what are you doing here, movie?
Okay. Agree to disagree. I don't agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, does a movie have to have a message?
Well, this movie has a message.
That's a serious question, though.
Okay.
That's serious.
No, absolutely not. And if this movie was, say, 50% funnier, I would have given it all the room to be a bullshit story.
That's a lot of percent.
You can be Hangover for all you want. But this movie so clearly, from the outset, wants to send multiple messages mm-hmm. that I don't give it that grace.
That's fair, John. That's fair.
What grade do you give it?
I think it was well acted. So I can't be too harsh, even if I just don't like the thrust overall. So I'm going to give it a C minus.
Wow. That's low. All right. Thank you so much for joining us, John.
John, we appreciate that you watched the whole film, even though we knew you would not like it.
I mean, you know, it's really funny because we've actually watched a lot of like important movies about race on this podcast.
Yeah.
Especially the ones on the AFI. And they are usually movies where, like, it's like somebody is being super grossly, obviously racist, right? Like To Kill a Mockingbird, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like these horrible hillbillies, like, obviously sexually abuse their own daughter and they want to blame it on a black guy. But Superman over here, Gregory Peck's going to come in here.
Right. Like, it does the two faults. One's the white savior, and one is like, oh, racism is an issue of bad actors and not a systemic thing.
Oh, Michael. Yeah. That was good.
Thank you.
That was so smart. this is why I thought it was, again, another reason I thought it was better commentary. It's just like racism is insidious and systemic. And it's really hard to tell a story that shows that well.
It is.
It's also an entertaining movie.
Yeah.
That's all. That's my last point.
Well, okay.
What grade do you give it?
Well, I'll make some points too. So, do you want to give your grade?
Yeah. I'm gonna give it an A minus.
Cool.
Because I do think it sometimes is a little blunt. Sometimes it loses itself a little. Like, it does actually suffer from what I like about it. What you talked about, that they just sort of threw all the spaghetti at the wall to see what stuck.
Yeah. Okay. That's you're done?
Yep.
So, yeah, I feel like I actually agree with John to an extent. Like, there is a lot of things about this movie that I do not understand. And Sam was bringing up elements that both of we didn't understand, that his coworker was not real. You know,
yeah.
There's a lot of individual things where I don't really understand, but I'm not being weird. I don't think they have to make sense to be a good movie. I don't feel like I have to like, oh, I figured out the puzzle, therefore check, it's good. You know, it can be chaos. The reason why Southland, I even like to a degree like Southland Tales for the weirdness, but it was just so boring and like I just couldn't follow it. That was the actual issue. Right. I actually like craziness and weirdness and whatever. So this movie had a lot of that for me, which I liked. But you could also take away, there were coherent messages, as you said. And I think John even agreed, at a high level, there were some coherent messages. So this film had a lot. This film had a lot of comedy, and I liked the characters. The bit at the end, there's a part that drags at the end, where he does the whole, like, I want to reveal the story, and he goes on the show. There's like, there's not really a lot of comedy here. I need to fast forward to that.
I also forgot to mention that the acting in this is phenomenal. Like, nobody is laying down on the job.
Because, as we've established, we feel like these actors understood the movie and liked the movie.
Yeah.
Which is a big deal.
I get why I'm here.
Which is a really, really big deal. And that is great. So, this movie does a lot for me. So, I will give it an A.
Which you think, like, that comes from strong direction. Which, again, I'm, like, really surprised this is his first, and I assume only film. Yeah, that's what Sam said.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. What are we... Who are we sponsored by this week?
Sponsored by Adidas.
Adidas. Because all day I dream about sports. Sometimes I go running and I'm like, whoa.
Do you think you'd run better with Adidas?
I bet.
I bet. I bet twice as good.
I bet. I'm like, if only I had an Adidas shirt instead
of this. What are you, fucking Nike?
No. Adidas, man.
Adidas all the way. Adidas for life.
Just do it.
AFL.
But not, don't just do it, because that's the other thing.
Right. Don't just do that and other things. Do a lot of things.
All the things.
Do many things. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to wear sports clothes that are like expensive but not cool, Adidas.
Adidas.
Dude.
Hell yeah. That was a great plug,
that
man.
That was really good.
That was really good. What's our next film that we're going to review?
I'm so glad you asked. And I'm so sorry because I don't actually know anything about this film other than it's famously bad. Okay. So it might be super weird and gross.
John is
so excited. Don't watch this with kids around. It is Showgirls.
Showgirls. A Paul Verhoeven, I believe.
Sorry, I'm laughing, folks.
At some point, John is gonna leave this podcast, and I will understand.
I'm surprised he's still here.
It's crazy. God, what? That's so nice of him. Stay tuned for that trailer.
And cut.
Yeah, I usually say
I get a choice.
So, what are you going to Vegas for? You gonna win?
I'm gonna dance.
There's a spot open in the chorus line. We're auditioning tomorrow morning. I think you should try out.
I got an audition.
Okay, ladies, I got one interest here, and that's the show. I don't care whether you live or die. I want to see you dance, and I want to see you smile. I can't use you if you can't smile. I can't use you if you can't show. I can't use you if you can't sell.
From the creators of Basic Instinct, The Last Time, they took you to the edge. This time, they're taking you all the way.
We take the cash, we cash the check, we show them what they want to see.
You got more natural talent when you dance than anybody I've ever seen.
She's going down to the Stardust. She's gonna be in the show.
Right? If someone gets in your way, step on them.
It's not fair.
It's not about fair, it's about power.
You're a stripper, don't you get it?
I'm a dancer.
She's dazzling, she's exciting, and she's what Las Vegas is all about.
The passion is real.
I can fall in love with you.
The desire is intense.
You can't touch me, but I can touch you. I'd really love to touch you.
And the show is about to begin. Showgirls, leave your inhibitions at the door.